All right, guys, before we jump in, I want to tell you real quick about the 0 to 100 Elite Mastermind. This is our own high-level group for serious real estate investors looking to scale fast. Inside, we share deals, strategies, and we build real relationships all to grow our cash flow portfolios. And you know what? Most members actually add 10-plus units in their first year. Plus, you'll get exclusive access to our podcast guests for direct Q&A. If you're chasing time freedom through real estate, check it out at 0to100tribe.com. That's Z-E-R-O-T-O, the number 100, tribe.com. Now, enjoy the show.
When you're low income and you're living in that way, like there's a lot of things you spend your time on that aren't like progressing. And so I also like gained a real heart for people who are stuck in those situations because like, man, it's tough. Like you're dealing with frozen pipes. You're dealing with driving across town to the laundromat. You're dealing with like, so I have a lot of respect for people who start there and who are crawling out of that hole. Like it's super tough.
Being on some chips, we go 0 to 100 real quick.
Welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast. I'm Travis Dillard, and we're all about scaling a cash flow real estate portfolio from 0 to over 100 units and achieving your retirement number one, or R1. That's where passive income from real estate replaces your day job and gives you complete time freedom, which is the new currency of the rich.
I'm Mitchell Lehman, and I'm thrilled to have you on board. With our combined real estate holdings valued over $100 million, learn from us and others who achieve time freedom through cash flow real estate.
This is Gabriel Hamill. Here at 0 to 100, you will not hear us talk about house flipping, spec homes, wholesaling, or land banking. We are only about achieving time freedom through buying and holding cash flow real estate. So remember, if R1 is the destination, real estate is the vehicle, and cash flow is the gas. Now go out there and buy some cash flow real estate.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast.
You know what? We forgot the theme music. This guest requested theme music, and we forgot.
Yeah, I wanted Eye of the Tiger. They just won't give it to me, ever. So,
I thought you wanted something from The Little Mermaid, but we can talk about that later. So, next week we should have a much better guest than the one we have this week. But I'm joking. Who's our mystery guest today? Mitchell England. Mitch, the one and only. No, I'm actually excited because I really want to expose you. I want to expose
That's
the true
only
Mitch.
Reason.
I want to dig in. I want to get. I'm going to.
I'm nervous for this.
I'm going to get deep. Yeah. I'm going to get deep with Mitch. Yeah.
Let's find out who this guy is.
What makes Mitch tick? Right. If good, anything, good, you know, good. Is this guy asleep at the wheel? Or is there something going on with him? Is there something that's more that meets the eye with Mitch?
Can we take an hour and just see if there's anything there, anything at all? You know, like maybe just a little scrap of knowledge would be great, Mitch.
Since Travis gave you this half-assed intro, Mitch, we'll let you intro yourself a little bit as we ask all our guests kind of how they got started, like young Mitch. So before you were a father, a husband, a badass real estate investor, partner at 0 to 100, tell us your story. Let's go back to when you were a little guy, before you were old.
And can I interject really fast? Because I don't want to get into little Mitch, little bitty, tiny, sensitive Mitch. But I want to tell everybody how I met Mitch. I was at a charity event for an organization that probably didn't need the money because they're a private school and they charge too much in tuition. Mitch and I didn't want to be there because we hate shit like this. Our wives, I think, drug us, or I think your sister drug you. And anyway, Mitch moved to the area to be a real estate agent. And he was working with my wife and their real estate brokerage. And like, right, when you're an entrepreneur and you're always thinking about things like cap rates and growing real estate portfolios, and you're excited about, like, if you're a contrarian thinker, which is what we're always talking about here on the tribe, think differently. And, you know, you get bored with a lot of people. And I sat down and, you know, you look at a guy like Mitch and you think pure boredom. This is going to be an awful conversation. He's at the table that I'm at. This is going to be one more person that I don't want to waste my time with. And this is going to be 30 or this is going to be another 60 to 120 minutes of life wasted talking to this guy.
Unbelievable intro, by the way.
I'm just saying, this is how I met you, and this is what I'm thinking. This, right?
This is unbelievable. I love this. Tell us how you feel, Trav. Tell us how you feel.
I think it's important that we're genuine. Anyway, it was a great conversation. We talked about scaling in real estate, being entrepreneurs. I had never, at least in my hometown, I hadn't met anybody that I could have this type of conversation with. And you fast forward to today, this was like 2017. Fast forward today, Mitch and I have been business partners for several years and is truly 100% my best friend on earth. And I only have two friends and one's my dog. So that's, you know, that's, oh yeah, Mitch is my best friend. He's my business partner.
In this picture. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
He's
man.
Like, I have two friends. I thought he was going to say Mitch and Gabe. And he says, Mitch and my dog. I'm out.
Yeah, you're done, man.
Actually, I don't have a lot of friends, and Mitch and Gabe are my best friends. I've known Mitch a little longer than Gabe. I'm starting to like Gabe a lot more than Mitch though. So he's sort of passing him up in like the friendship race, but that's a different podcast. No, this guy's an impressive guy. Don't let the looks deceive you. Like this guy he comes from very humble means. He comes from the local town that I'm in. He's scrappy. He's always been scrappy. And I don't know if a lot of you know this, Mitch is actually, he's the brains behind 0 to 100. It was his idea. It was his idea to write the book. I've been sort of like along for the ride and have enjoyed every second of it. This guy's a contrarian thinker. He was buying real estate when he was like 18 using college loans, like probably society tells you not to do. And he's just a badass. And I'm honored to call him a friend and a business partner. So, Mitch, let's start back with Gabe's question. Let's go back to little Mitch, little bitty, tiny, cuddly Mitch. Tell us about that. Cause I know you've always been a weirdo. You've always thought differently than other people. So
I have been a weirdo, and thank you for wrapping that up with compliments. That's what emotional abuse looks like, guys, by the way. That intro, that is emotional abuse right in front of you. So if you guys were wondering what that looks like, if you're wondering what a dysfunctional relationship looks like, Travis just gave you that, that template on that intro. So no, I'm kidding.
Stockholm syndrome.
Stockholm. I just keep coming back. I can't find the exit, you know? So this all started like young for me, this whole like contrarian thinking and real estate and like how to be free, you know, like I just growing up and watching, my dad, you know, worked really, really hard for us. And he worked on the railroad, which is amazing. And my mom go to work as well as between being a stay at home mom and then working half the time. She worked really hard too, but I started to just kind of look around and just go like, I wonder if there's like a different like way to do this. You know, I was always sort of a questioning kid. Like I'm like always asking why and pushing back on teachers and put, you know, and so it started young having this questioning mindset. And then when I was, I think I was probably 14, I really loved aviation. I wanted to get an aviation. I ended up getting a job at the local airport. And like, that's where things really took off for me. Like my mindset started to really change. I would be over there like on a Tuesday gassing up this guy's airplane. He's in his 30s or 40s or whatever. And I'm like, how is this guy flying airplanes on a Tuesday, you know, bopping around the sky while everybody else is driving to work each day? And so like that, I feel like, you know, when I look back on young Mitch, I'm like, okay, there's a couple moments, right? I picked up Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like a lot of people on, and that was really influential, but also just watching these people and then starting to ask them questions like, wait, like you own this airplane. Okay. You're out here on a Tuesday. What do you do? And I'm telling you, the theme was always like, I own businesses, I own real estate. And it kept happening to me even as, you know, a 14, 15 year old, that was really influential. And I remember thinking like I have freedom now, but that freedom is going to go away when you get into the real world. And I was listening really intently to these people that I was watching fly these, you know, airplanes around while everybody else was working. So I think that was the precipice, like, huh. Unfortunately, it took a long time to like really understand how to go do that. I sort of knew the vision, but didn't really know the steps. So.
Them questions. Did any of those pilots become mentors? Did you dig into stuff pretty deep, or was it pretty surface level? Like, hey, what do you do? Oh, I invest in real estate, or I started this business. Or did you go pretty deep with some of these in some of these conversations?
Yeah. So, you know, I had the opportunity. I ended up getting my pilot's license a couple years later. I had the opportunity to fly with my instructor who got a job flying a contractor around, a local, I should say maybe developer. And he was building homes maybe like in three or four different places, hundreds of homes at a time. So we would fly from Hood River, Oregon to like Salem, or we'd fly to Yakima, Washington, and we'd go look at these sites that he was building. And he was probably, I want to say he was in his 30s at the time, this guy named Chris Jones, big influence on my life, really, really nice guy. And I, but I, I didn't understand any of it, but I was like, gosh, this guy's got such a big vision. He was using debt and he was on the developer side. So he's not doing what we're doing today, but like that was really inspirational. And I had some really good conversations with him too. Like, you know, just like more mindset stuff, thinking outside the box, thinking big, like putting teams into place. So yeah, like that had it slowly morph into like some friendships and some mentorship, relationships that definitely affected me.
How'd you get Rich Dad Poor Dad? Was it one of those people that handed it to you, or how'd you end up with it?
Man, I'm trying to think about that answer. I don't know. I think I stumbled upon it. I don't think it was somebody from the airport, but I think it was maybe a friend of my parents, but they were, I was basically, having a conversation with, a friend of my parents, and she was flipping homes and doing these kind of things. And I think it was her that gave me the book. So totally accident.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I also don't know. I don't remember where I got Rich Dad Poor Dad, but it's such an influential book. I think maybe I know, but I don't want to make it up. And I've asked other people too, and they forget where they got it, but it's such an impactful book.
Well, I could be making that up. I think that that's how that went, but I feel like it just landed on, you know, and I read it, and like, it was kind of like you, Gabe, where it was like, I didn't read a lot in high school. I hated reading, but like after the first couple pages, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like speaking to me, you know?
Well, it's funny with Rich Dad Poor Dad, because as you're talking, I'm like, man, what the hell? Where did I get Rich Dad Poor Dad? But I'll tell you, I've given it out at least 100 times. I keep a stock on my shelf, just the cheap paperback version I hand out. And if anybody here is like, if you love somebody, especially someone young, and you really want them to sort of look at the world differently and look at the world through a different lens, have them read Rich Dad Poor Dad. By the way, maybe not necessarily go to some of the newer sort of Rich Dad Poor Dad stuff, but like that book is like, that book's really like, wow, look at the world differently. Look at cash flow. I mean, one of the examples that always stuck out to me when he first read about it is he had a windfall where he could have went and bought a Ferrari, like all of us would have, like, well, not just, whatever your thing of choice is. And he went out and bought a self-storage facility, and then he financed the Ferrari and then used the income off the self-storage facility to pay the payments on the self-storage facility. And then after 5 years, he owns a Ferrari and a self-storage facility. I'm like, oh man, that, I don't know, whatever it was, but that was sort of like, nope, the light bulb went off. So little Mitch, I know you well, and I know your family. And I also know like the latitude and freedom your parents gave you scares the hell out of me as a dad. And I do have a question because I know like, what are you like 16 years old flying planes, or like, oh, my buddy's lending me the plane. He throws you the keys. You're like flying over the treetops in the gorge at like 16. When you're even younger than that, your dad has you crawling on rafters, helping you like wire the house. Like you were kind of, I mean, yeah, your parents were normal, super cool people, but not super normal when it came to like how they raised their kids, or you, for example, right? Like you kind of had a lot of freedom. How does that play into like where you're at today?
I think it plays a huge part. Like I was able to look at the world differently very quickly and also like establish like a scrappiness at a very, very young age. Like my mom like just tried to keep me alive. And my dad was like, he thought I was full grown at like 4 years old. He's like, he told my mom that. He goes, he's a full grown man. I don't know why you're talking to him like that. And I'm like four, you know? And so dad had me wiring the house when I was six on the roof. The same year, three-story roof, right? I remember one time I said, hey, Dad, you know, I'd love a ride down to a friend's house. I was like 14. He's like, why aren't you hitchhiking by now? I don't understand why you're not hitchhiking. You should have been hitchhiking years ago. You know, because here, by the way, I've been a man for 10 years. I haven't hitchhiked. You know, he's like, first of all, you should get your license. I'm like, Dad, that's not legal until 16. And he's like, oh, well, you should probably put your thumb out then. So I started hitchhiking at 16 or 14 or 15, somewhere in there. And of course, mom was super, super upset about that. But to me, it was like, I kept figuring out how to get further and further, like away from home on like these adventures. Like it started like, you know, it started out by riding motorcycles over the hill. And then it was like hitchhiking across town. And then I met this guy with an airplane, and now we're flying across the country together. And, I just, I think that freedom for my dad was really, really important to give me that. My mom was always on edge, like, you know, trying to keep me alive, which I don't blame her. I have children now, so I get that. But yeah, I got my pilot's license really young, which meant I had access to airplanes at seven. I had access to airplanes at 16 years old, actually. Technically got my pilot's license before my real license, because I, anyway, got in an accident and they pulled that away. So I had my pilot's license, didn't have my full driver's license. And yeah, but I had a ton of freedom, and we had a ton of adventures as a young kid. And, but that also, like, I'll tell you, when like I got into the real working world, that like loss of freedom was such a damper on my life. I felt like, right. Like I went through my whole childhood with all this freedom and I felt like it was amazing. And then all of a sudden I went into the Navy and I went into other corporate jobs. And like, it was this huge feeling of like, how do I get my freedom back? You know?
So let's talk about that. So you had your license and then what? Cause you mentioned you worked corporate, you're military. Were you planning on flying commercially, or, you know, what, you had your license. Did you work as a pilot, or what was kind of the next step from there?
I had this dream to like fly commercially, event, you know, eventually airliners. And so, and I think that that's since faded, because I think that I don't think it's the same industry as it used to be. So I did a lot of flight training. I did get my commercial ticket and multi and instrument. I got a lot of the ratings that I needed for that career, but that slowly faded. I realized like that, you know, that was just going to be another job, and driving bus in the sky wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do either. So I think my 20s were made up of a little confusing. Like, I'm like, you know, I'd love to go fly, you know, I joined the military. I ended up getting a corporate job with a company called InSitu, where I actually flew drones overseas in the Middle East, which was an amazing adventure. But also, like, I basically just kind of stumbled into my 20s, and I kept switching masters that I reported to, you know, and like that, I still didn't have my freedom. And so,
but you also started buying real estate in your 20s, right?
I did. I started dabbling. I'd say dabbling, because I just wasn't really like, I wasn't focused. I didn't really understand. Like, I understood the big picture of what I wanted, but I couldn't figure out like what that looked like. So like my first deals, for example, I bought a little piece of property at 19. I sold the motorcycle, took the rest of the money from like a student loan, which I didn't read the legalities behind that, but anyway, made it work. Got a little piece of land, and I was just like, I was just diving in trying to figure it out. I actually bought like two pieces of land on the coast. And I thought I was going to make a bunch of money before the big 08 crash. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to college and or working, but also like real estate was always this thing on the side where I'm like, I know I can get freedom through that. Didn't really understand it. Took a number of years just sort of playing with different real estate assets. A couple of them I lost money on, most of them I made money on, you know, but it wasn't like a real diligent focus until probably like 30, 31 years old.
Can I rewind for a second? I know you kind of glossed over the flying thing. That was your dream, man. Like that was like, you lived, breathed, and ate flying from as a little boy. You wanted to fly. You joined the Navy as an officer. We've since forgiven you for that, being an officer, Gabe and I. But like, you know, you wanted to fly, you're going to flight school, and there were some reasons you couldn't go to flight school, right? There were some medical reasons. And you were dashed, right? Like, go back to that, Mitch. Like, what did that feel like? And then in reflection, my follow-on question is like, how did that feel? I know how it felt, but I'm leading you on. But then in hindsight, like, I'm not a big woo-woo guy, but like, where are you at today? And are you glad it happened? And how do you reflect on that?
You know, I got through 4 years of ROTC and college. I did my best to get a flight slot. Got a flight slot in the Navy, moved from San Diego to Pensacola, and I got my flight gear, I got my flight suit. I was ready to go. You know, I was part of the next sort of class to go fly for the Navy. During the time there was a reduction in force, so they were trying to come up with any reason they could disqualify guys. I got disqualified for my right eyelid is lower than my left. I've had a Levator issue, and but they blessed it for five years actually prior. And so yeah, I mean, I was like 21 days into this to this career that I thought I had. And I had worked for since I was, I started flight training when I was 15. And like, I just fell on my face. Like, I felt like I was like at a whole new low. I mean, I'm 21 or 22 years old. I've worked pretty hard for this. And now I'm sitting there, you know, handing back my, my flight book books in my suit. And it was like a really humbling moment for me, I think, and pivotal. And I think that like, it was just one of those moments that just, it, they, you know, takes the rug out from underneath you. And I felt pretty lost. And I, but I also felt like, you know, after a couple months or whatever, I felt like I needed to like get back on my feet and like choose a direction and start moving. I remember thinking like action will get me there. I didn't know where there was, by the way, but I remember I like, I need to take action. I need to go, whether that's, you know, in my, within the Navy or out of the Navy. I started flight training on the civilian side again. After getting this news, I went back and got my master's degree. I just got serious about taking action, even if I really didn't know what direction I was going in. And so, and I felt like that helped me dig out of that hole.
And in hindsight, now you've hit R1 and you've got all this freedom in the world and you're not, you know, pulling like swing shifts and working weekends, driving a bus across the sky. No offense to anybody that's listening that's a pilot, but in hindsight, like,
yeah,
the universe worked out for you. Things worked out. And that piece of land you bought on a student loan, by the way, that's not legal, I think. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend that. But I love the scrappiness. Would you, first question is, what are your lessons learned with that? Your first real estate purchase? I've never met anybody that bought real estate at 18, by the way.
Well, it was 19 to clarify, but yeah, I
that's not a big deal then.
I know. See, it's not impressive. You know, I was watching everybody make, I was watching everyone make a lot of money, and I think it was like 06, 07. So you get it, right? It's a big run up. I didn't know anything about investing. But I was like, I got to get into the game. I got to figure out how to buy something. And the idea was just to sell it, buy and sell. And so managed to get this property on a contract. I think it was like $14,000, you know, for this lot. I thought, well, the area has got to get better. It's right by the beach, you know? And so bought this property. I had a contract on it in like 7 or 8 months for like $54,000. So I thought I was going to make 40 grand in college. I'm like, and up until then I had like $1,200 total ever. So I'm signing the contract. I send over the contract and I'm like super excited. We go mutual on this thing and the buyer just disappears. It's like right before the crash or right in the crash. So he disappears and I'm stuck with this land. Forfeits his earnest money. So I get $1,000, you know, whatever. So basically like that property for me was like pure speculation. I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, if I could buy it, I could sell it for more. I wouldn't say it was investing. I would say it was gambling,
which is what most people think real estate investing is. I'm going to buy some land and hold it and sell it for a profit. Like that's 100%. Right.
Very different than buy and hold real estate. So you were just straight speculating. You're like, I know I should buy something, own something, and hopefully, which hope is not a strategy, hopefully I'll sell this for more later.
100%, 100%, speculative. Didn't have any, didn't cash flow. I was paying HOAs or whatever the, you know, the neighborhood fee was. I was paying payments on it. I was paying taxes on it. It was negative cash flow, took away from my freedom versus gave to it. So it was, you know, but it got me in the game. I took action. I got in the game and I learned my lesson on that. You know, and so
what happened with that property?
I probably held it for like 8 years, paid taxes and HOAs on it. And then I sold it for probably about $1,000 more. I mean, I didn't make anything on it. Probably lost a couple grand over time. So cheap education.
I was going to say, but what was that education worth? Knowing not to buy speculative properties, buy properties at cash flow, right? Yeah. I mean, so do you regret it?
No, not at all. I think the best way like to learn is to get in the game, take action. First of all, I mean, you can take better action than I took. That's easy. Like listen to the tribe, go network on the tribe or listen to these calls, like go buy something cash flow day one. But like, I think the best thing I could do is take action young and learn from it. So no, I would do it again for sure.
So lesson to learn here is tap out your student loans, go buy speculative land. I'm joking. Yeah. Don't do that. But the lesson learned is like, take action and learn. Like Mitch learned some incredible lessons again, like buy cash flow. Don't be speculative. And did you finance that? But yeah, that's right. It was a student loan. So you kind of did. It's like,
that was just the down payment. The rest was a contract. So the down payment was a motorcycle. I sold like an 86 Yamaha, I think Virago or something like that. Took some from my student loan. That was my down payment. And then I financed the rest. It was 100%. Well, minus the motorcycle. Yeah.
Yeah. But you had some success with land after that, right? You kept at it. And then you did.
I did. Yeah. So the next two pieces of land I bought were different, still land that didn't cash flow. So I don't recommend that, but I found these things off market. It was actually a buddy of mine. He said, look, I'm going to school overseas. I inherited these from my dad. I want to sell them. I grew up with him. So we're sitting at the bar and I go, hey man, like you're my buddy. Like my goal is to buy these from you and go make a profit. I had to be really clear about that. Cause I'm like, this is like my friend. I don't want to, you know, anything weird there, but he's like, look, if you pay me this, I don't care. So I paid him 75 for one. I paid him 80 for the next on a contract. Really easy contract. I think I put like maybe 5 or 10% down. And my idea with these was like, I'm going to buy them for this value. I knew going in that they were valued higher. Like everything was going for maybe 1 to 120, but he needed speed. He just wanted to get it done and leave town. So I bought them. On one of them, I put a road in, I put a well, I dug a well, I put a four person septic in, you know, and I made it so like a developer could come in and like see the site that this home would be in. That one I sold for 120. And then the next one, I think I sold for 125. You know, you do the math, right? I made maybe $60,000 or $70,000 on these two sales. And it happened over probably like maybe 3 or 4 months. So that was like my first like, this real estate thing could work. Now it still wasn't cash flow. It still was, you know, somewhat speculative, but I did go in understanding the values of those properties. So it was, I would say it was a safer bet. But still, you know,
how'd you finance them?
Both on a contract. Yeah. Yeah. Owner contract, both of them. Yep.
So you came in with a little more knowledge, kind of, again, another lesson is maybe start with the end in mind, like, which we do even 0-100, like we're buying properties that we can force appreciate, things that we have more control over. Obviously it's speculative, but you were a bit more educated as opposed to, I'm just going to buy something for the sake of buying it. And then,
yeah, 100%.
And then, so that's cool. Okay. So you're now, out of the Navy, you've done some land stuff. You're in the corporate world. And what happens? Is that what, did you buy something? Did you own any cash flowing real estate at that point?
I'm trying to think about that. So I got out of the, Navy. I deployed and flew drones overseas. I made some good money overseas. And you know, I was a single guy at the time, so I didn't have a lot of expenses, and I started putting that back into real estate. So I actually bought a house and house hacked it, like, you know, lived downstairs, finished the top, rented that out. Basically like that was like my first like, oh, well I can get somebody else to pay the mortgage, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Were you thinking about cash flow at the time? Cause I'm curious to Travis's question, but also when did you transition from, hey, I'm buying land to I want a cash flow? I mean, house hack, you're thinking about probably living for free or close to free. Is that when you started thinking about buying cash flow properties, or was it far after that?
No, I think it was right there, but it wasn't like, I wasn't buying cash flow properties to like be free. In my opinion, it was like, I bought this house. It was 255 in White Salmon. I thought it was way too much. I thought it was, at the time, I just thought, man, this might be too much for me to buy it off. But I figured if I put somebody up top, they can pay for it. And then someday if I move out, that it can cash flow. I ran the basic math on it. And that, it just made sense to me for my station in life. Like, hey, you know, somebody can pay my bill, and it wasn't as overwhelming for this mortgage. But I'll tell you, once I did it, I was like, oh, there's many, you know, there's several nights where I'm downstairs going, they're like paying the mortgage. Like this just seems crazy. This is too easy. Like, I don't know why I didn't do this a long time ago.
I've called that an accidental aha. We've all had those. We're like, oh, some of our early investing days, you know, like I did the same thing. I house hacked. I know, Gabe, you've done similar stuff where you're like, wait a minute. Aha. Like maybe that Robert Kiyosaki guy knew what he was talking about.
Yeah. I mean, like for me too, it was like I had just done land deals up till then. I did four of them. And it was like, if I thought buying real estate, like it was just money out of pocket until you sold it. But like, this was the first one I bought it. And then all of a sudden I'm getting paid to own it. That was a totally different. And again, I learned that in Rich Dad Poor Dad years ago, but I just hadn't done it, you know? So
That's also OPM and OPT. Like a lot of times people think it just, it's other people's money because you went to the bank, it was a VA loan, right? So it was zero down, I'm assuming. Yeah. Right. So a bank financed the whole thing, or maybe if you're not ex-military, you could go get 5% down using like first time home buyer loan, FHA loans, things like that. So you have no money into this deal, very little. Someone else is now paying that mortgage down. They're going to work every single day and they're working 8 to 10 hours a day to pay your mortgage down, which increases your net worth every single month. That's OPT. Or you're using that person upstairs, using their time. So you had two tiers, albeit small, and you're starting. We talk about leverage a lot in the tribe. Like you're using different forms of leverage to start getting ahead because you started with nothing. So you got to use the leverage. If you're like the rest of us schmucks that came from nothing, like you got to start. You got to think that way. You got to borrow other people's money. You got to use other people's time to be able to get ahead.
Yeah. So like about that time, I met my wife Hannah, and I was still deploying overseas. So I decided to stop deploying. I thought that was like no way. I was excited to start a family and everything. So so I took a job in Minnesota, and it was with a company, a medical tech company. Worked at Rochester in Mayo Clinic and that kind of stuff in med tech, really on like construction project management side. So I dove into this industry, this job, and it was like the epitome of like the corporate grind. Like my weeks were full, my weekends were full. It was phone calls all the time. It was like more emails than I could keep up with. Like it was just the most overwhelming thing. I was there for 2 years, I think, but it was really, really, like it was the first time in my life that I just felt like, oh shit, I have signed up for the wrong thing and I'm stuck in this. And by the way, like we're having a little girl on the way and my expenses are growing. So I need this job to like pay for it. Like I felt very, very trapped. And it was like, I started to see that like rich dad, poor dad sort of like vision disappearing because I'm at this job going like, oh my God, now we have a house and we've got expenses and we have some student loans and we have all this stuff and we have a new baby on the way. And so that was another moment in my life where I'm like, God, man, if I don't do something, this is really bad. And I remember this one day I was sitting down with my boss and, it was like my year review and he goes, hey, you know what? You did really well this year. And I want to tell you two really good pieces of news. He said, first of all, I'm going to give you a raise for like 3%. Okay. Which like, inflation. He gave me inflation raise, which was nothing. So I'm like, okay, well, first piece of news sucks. What's the second piece of news? He goes, if you keep doing this at this level, you might have my job someday if I move up. And I was like, all right, so two for two, this dun, sucks. Dun, dun. Like, yeah, I'm like two for two, like someone just walk in the room and shoot me because I wasn't interested in this. And so, but that was really one of the best things he could have said to me because right away I remember, okay, cash flow real estate. I remember Kiyosaki. Like I had these flashbacks and I remember thinking, I went home that day and my wife goes like, how'd it go? And I said, well, we're going to give ourselves a raise. And she goes, what does that mean? I'm like, we're going to buy a rental property. And by the way, we had no money at the time. And so, but we started looking, we started driving properties after work. Any minute I had, we're driving properties, looking at properties, trying to get creative. We found a little property for $90,000 in Minnesota. I bought it and right away I was $700 a month positive, which by the way, for my income was like a 12% raise. So I gave myself a 12% raise and that's where things really started to like tick in my mind. Like, wait a second, this corporate grind gave me 3%. I just gave myself 12%. I gotta go figure this out. I've got to start using cash flow and I've got to figure out like an escape because I could, staying at that job was miserable. It was all my time. It was everything I had. It was soul sucking. Absolutely soul sucking.
Was it motivating though? Like once you realize, hey shit, this is not what I want to do. I don't even want to do this for the next day, let alone the next 20, 30 years. Was there also a level of not just frustration, but motivation? You know, sometimes like when you feel that pain, you're like, okay, I feel that pain. But then what's the solution? What can I go do? Did you have that sense of urgency of like, I need to go replace this income or was it different than that?
It was different than that. So it was, let's give ourselves a raise and let's put a plan together to escape. Like I started to look at it like I was in prison and I got to escape. And so we put the plan together. Luckily my wife she's amazing. She's like, she's up for whatever, right? We had this little home that we own and a rental out in Minnesota. And I'm going, well, what if we like left and like, what if we, you know, I don't know, left our job and tried to be entrepreneurs. And we started talking through this, and every single time I talk about it, she's like, yeah, why don't we do that? Like, there was never any resistance. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to keep going with this plan. So basically we started to stash some cash, and I pulled some from my 401k, pulled some from Roth IRA, pulled every place I could pull some cash. I'm like, I'm going to get my account up to maybe like 30 or 40,000. And then I had a little bit of cash flow, and the idea is we would just quit. We'd leave and we'd go be entrepreneurs. And my idea was like, I'd go sell real estate. That would be sort of my bridge to like entrepreneurialism, not quite a job, but not quite total freedom. And so that's what we did. Yeah. I sent the email to my boss. I quit. I think I had about $40,000, which isn't a lot when you have a wife and a baby and expenses and all this stuff. I had probably $1,800 in cash flow. And, I bought an old Expedition, like a 1987 or whatever, just an old piece of crap. We bought a trailer, a camping trailer, because I knew we were going to be broke as hell. We were going to leave. We're basically just going to dive off the diving board all the way to the bottom. And then we're going to crawl our way out. So we bought this Expedition, we bought the trailer, and we're just leaving town. I'll never forget. We're just leaving town. Right. And my renter calls me, about some issues at the house. I go over there to this house. And by the way, I hadn't checked on this house for like 6 months. I thought everything was fine. His German Shepherd had like ripped up all the carpet. There was shit all over the floor. Like, it turned into this huge nightmare. And so we ended up renovating that house, before we,
well, actually, no, 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 left. No, 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 no.
What's up?
No, no. You tell me the extent of this property. By the way, hire good property managers and keep an eye on your assets. There's a lesson learned. No, you glazed over that, dude. This was disgusting.
Okay, this is the weirdest thing ever, right?
I was trying to get out of the real story. There's all these good stories hidden there. And
I mean, I know it was like, I'm sorry.
So it was kind of messed up, and then we renovated it. No, there was like dog shit up to the windows. I don't know. Or
okay,
something.
So this guy, it was so weird because he'd come over for dinner once a month. He'd pay me rent, right? He was my buddy. So I thought, I don't need to check on the house. Like, this guy's my buddy. We're, you know, and so I go over there, like, this German Shepherd's like a wild, this dog had never been outside. It was just unbelievable, attacking the door and like just out of control. And so he like held the dog, and I came in, and there wasn't a piece of like flooring left, and it was just dog shit everywhere. And by the way, the house now like had flies everywhere. So the flies would land on the wall, and the dog would take off running through the shit and then launch onto the wall and then scrape down the wall. So, I mean, the dog shit was taller than I am on the, I couldn't believe it, on the walls. Right. So I was nervous that something was going to happen if I quit my job, and this happened immediately. Like the next day, this was like my new reality.
I am so glad that Travis said like, hey, let's share a little bit more of this story.
It was like the most disgusting thing. So we pulled the trailer up, right? Keep in mind, I have a brand new baby, you know, basically. And my wife, we pulled the trailer up in front of this house, and we parked there.
And you're trying to get out of town. You were leaving day. Yeah.
And so I, Hannah's such a good sport, by the
and
way.
And I didn't have
your
much
wife
money.
Is such a good
like,
sport. I'd have left you years ago.
she's, I don't even understand it, man. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I go, let's renovate this house in like under 20 days. Right. Well, I'd never renovated a house either, by the way. So this is, you know, I did a little work on the other one, but mostly just demo. So we got in there. I was walking through there. At one point, I'm like, I had this contractor over to help me clean it, 'cause I'm like, I don't know what to do. This guy, his name is Bob. He lives locally in Red Wing, and he comes over. Thank God he came over, by the way, 'cause I was like, I think I had a tear in my eye. I'm like a grown man standing in this house thinking I'm going to lose it. I didn't know how to fix this. And he gets on his hands and floor, you know, hands and knees. He's crawling around smelling. He goes, yeah, it's just piss and shit, man. You're good. And I'm like, well, what did you think it was? And he's like, well, I thought you might have some sort of like, you know, some mold that's deeper in the walls or da, da, da. He's like, you're good, man. This is easy. This is easy. He's like, you got this. And he basically like mapped out what I needed to do to renovate this thing. And so anyway, he gave me a lot of confidence. We pulled together a couple people and we renovated it in 17 days, painted the walls, did the floors, moved some electric around, cleaned, cut out sheetrock.
What was the first step though? Like, were you cleaning? Did you clean the shit?
No. So he came in, I had him come in for like $300-$400 that he cleaned and like sterilized it. And then I went through with bins, like this like heavy shellac, like, and I just, with a mask on, with a full suit on, I sprayed every single surface. And then but even before that, we tore up floorboards that had, you know, too much dog pee to salvage. Like, it was a 16 hours a day type deal for 17 days. You know, it was nasty.
Not to go on a tangent, but this Bob guy was really interesting too. He kind of became a bit of a mentor, right? Like, isn't Bob the guy that here's this guy that's, by the way, don't ever judge a book by its cover. Here's a guy that's crawling around on his hands and knees. This is his little company, right? But there's more to Bob than meets the eye. In 20 seconds, tell us about Bob, because we should get Bob on the show here
someday. Yeah. So I haven't talked to him in years, but we'll have to go find him. So, you know, Bob was like, look, man, I own like 22 homes, like free and clear. And he's like, I've seen everything. And of course I'm like standing here going, wait, what, you own what? Like, how does that work? He's like, look, I've been in the cleaning business for years and years. And he told me his whole story. I mean, basically he got out of high school and put an ad in the paper, I'll clean anything, you know, type deal. And now he owns like, I think it was called like A1 cleaning or something, but he owned like 17 trucks. You know, he was building, I think at the time he was building like a 12,000 square foot home for cash. This guy was just, and meanwhile, he's crawling around on my floors, right? Smelling, going like, so he was just kind of just a scrappy dude who had just done it himself. And so for him, he gave me a lot of motivation and made me feel like I wasn't going to lose this thing. Cause I didn't know if I was going to lose the house, like the day I quit my job, you know? So,
you know, what's interesting about the story is, you know, you hear other horror stories in real estate. I mean, this one's pretty fun. But a lot of people, they'll go through something tough with their first property or their second property. Usually it's like their first property and they're done. I know people that had like one break in, you know, this homeless couple destroyed their home and they're like, I'm never investing in real estate again. There's like emotional attachment. So it's always interesting to hear. I mean, I don't know anyone that invests in real estate that doesn't have some kind of shitty, well, maybe not actually shitty story, but some kind of like situation that would make people go, damn, do I really want to keep investing in real estate? A lot of people stop. A lot of people quit. They said, screw this. It's too tough. This is gross. Like, what made you, was it talking to Bob that made you go, okay, this is not that big of a deal. At the end of the day, I still own real estate. I still own an asset that I can rent out and make money on. It had to get cleaned up. Oh, well. Or what was your mindset like after this got cleaned up?
You know, he gave me like a license to be like confident about it. Kind of. I mean, I'm like this young kid. I've got my wife and kid are out in the trailer, by the way. They can't come inside because it's too gross to come inside. Right. And I'm in here. Like, I felt really discouraged. Like, I don't know what to do with this thing, you know? And he just gave me this. He was like, look, I've been through everything, man. I've seen everything. I've done all this stuff. And by the way, here's where I am now. And he's like, just take action. Just go for it. And that was like, for me, it was like a license. I'm like, okay, I can just do this. I can go one day at a time. And that gave me like a lot of resilience, I think.
I think a lot of times people also, to Gabe's point, they freak the fuck out about stuff. Yeah. Like, oh my God, I had the same thing. I had some guy, he abandoned one of my rentals and he left a ferret or something fucking disgusting in there. And it just destroyed the place with urine. And most people are like, oh my God, life over, game over. But then when you really dig into it, you're like, you clean it. You know, you fix it, you paint it. And sort of the downside outweighs the upside. And then eventually you have, you know, 400 or 500 units like you do now. And then you have other people that are, you know, they're cleaning it and fixing it. And you start to go, you know what? This shit isn't that big of a deal. Like 90% of the stuff that you deal with in real estate isn't that big of a deal. It's just people freak out. Oh my God, the toilet's running and leaking. Yeah, the fucking toilet's leaking. Like, you fix it and you move on and you collect your rent. Yeah. Yeah, shit happens quite literally here. From the audience asks, does the renter pay for damages? Did you have a security deposit or keep last month's rent? Probably none of that, because you were an idiot at the time, like all of us when we started.
Well, kind of. I mean, it didn't cost me a lot to renovate because we did it all ourselves and I hired some kid to help me paint it and everything. So I think it probably cost me like $6,000. It was a small house and we did all the work. I told him to meet me at the coffee shop and I said, hey man, this guy was from overseas. He was over here like on a work visa or whatever. And I was like, I gotta be honest with you. Like, this is totally fucked up. Like, what you did to my house. He didn't really understand it. He was kind of like, I don't know. I just thought that's what, you know, how you live or whatever. So I basically just said, look, like you need to cut me a check for, I just chose $5,000. I don't know why. Cut me a check for $5,000 and don't talk to me ever again. Like, get out of here. Or I'm going to your work. I'm going to your boss, and your boss is going to, I'm going to have your boss over. Like, right. And the boss, but he was on a work visa. Smart. So he got scared. So he wrote me a check for $5,000. I never talked to him again. Actually, he texted me like a week later and he's like, hey, because you made me move out, they had to kill the dog. And I'm like, thank God. Cause this thing was like a rabid, you know, so they killed the dog.
Careful for the animal lovers. Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't love this animal. So
remember, Travis's best friend besides you.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't love this animal. Trust me. I also love animals, but not this one.
The image of this crazed German shepherd running through a bunch of shit up a wall to catch a fly.
Every handle was like chewed in there. Like you couldn't even, the door handle wasn't even there anymore. It was just like this little, to a point. This dog was, unfortunately, I mean, not the dog's fault. Like the owner was terrible, but.
This wouldn't have been even a good podcast if Travis didn't force you to dig into the story. You said Bob tells you he owns 22 homes free and clear at the time. Did you ever buy any of those properties? I mean, my brain goes 22 homes free and clear. My brain goes to seller financing. I mean, did you ever end up buying any properties from Bob?
No, you know, he was like, I asked him like what his plan was and everything. And he was like, just, he was at that point where he was just accumulating. So he didn't use much leverage, but the 22 homes created such cash flow that now he was buying one every couple months. And his biggest problem was cash. He told me he couldn't get the cash out fast enough. And so he was just like, he was not interested in and he was only like maybe 50 or something. He wasn't looking for retirement. So he was like, the last thing I do is want to sell one because all I want to do is buy. And so he was kind of in a different mode, but yeah, I agree. I should have been. Yeah. Anyway. Seems like a good solid contract.
You really fucked that one up. Just buy real estate. Don't be a bitch. Like Gabe says, just go buy.
That's right.
Okay. So this property you just sold like a year or so ago, a couple years ago, like you had this in your portfolio for a while. So like you get in this crappy expedition. That's a piece of shit, pulling a piece of shit trailer. Your wife's pregnant or you have a brand new baby and then what? You fix the shit house and you move on. What happens?
So I heard that real estate in Seattle was popping, which by the way, I didn't know what that meant at all. I had read an article that it was like Seattle's popping. So we drive this expedition all the way from Red Wing, Minnesota out to Seattle. And the idea was like, I'm just going to go sell real estate because I've done a couple deals. Like it can't be that hard, you know? And so, but I didn't know anybody. And I also sold Hannah, like I was showing her these pictures. I'm like, look, this place is popping. Okay. First of all, second of all, we're going to live this great little life, in this RV park. I found an RV park in Kent, Washington. And she was like, oh, this is going to be great. Well, come to find out it's right on the Green River, right? You know about the Green River killer. He killed maybe like only about 40. So anyway, they put him away. Hannah was like, this is insane. We're underneath this cloud of fog for like, cause we got out there in the wintertime. It was like the most horrible conditions. And we're parked in the mud in this park. It was a KOA and it was like, it was basically like one step before homelessness. Like there were like all these campers with like tarps over them and like multiple mornings I'd help people jumpstart their cars so they could get to work, like things like that. Like it was really, it was like the lowest we could have fallen this park. So I started taking real estate courses. So did Hannah, cause she was going to get her license. And we honestly went and lived like a very low income life. I mean, we're going to the laundromat all day. Like our pipes froze. I remember one time our pipes froze in the camper or like coming into the camper. And I had to like retrofit, like I'm surprised I didn't get electrocuted, but I took this space heater, put a bag around it, like borrowed some power from the neighbor and like heated the pipe so that they could run through, you know, so I could have water, you know, and Hannah's inside. I'm going, everything's under control, you know, it's like nothing's under control.
Don't worry, babe. Don't leave.
Yeah. I know. So we're there. So we were there for
Mitch really quick. For those of you that are listening, like you got to meet Mitch's wife. She's this amazing, beautiful, such a badass woman. And you look at Mitch. And you're like, what in the hell? So just remember this. Dreams can come true for anybody. And keep in mind, by this time, the German Shepherd chasing the shitty flies, the trailer, she has not left him yet.
No, she's still with me. So she, yeah, she's an amazing, she's definitely the better half. So, but yeah, we did real estate courses and we were, you know, I was trying to figure out how to sell real estate, from the camper. Once I got my license, I was trying to sell real estate from the camper but I didn't know anybody. So I started cold calling, right? I started like dialing and that was a whole, I mean, cold, I don't know, you know, you go try to cold call. Like you understand, like if you don't know what to say, like it's pretty rough. So I remember a day, like I'm sitting on the bed in the camper cold calling. I cold called like 300 or 400 people using a dialer and I come out and I'm like,
in a trailer.
Yeah. And these people are like literally telling you like, fuck off, you know, screw your mother. Like it's terrible. It's the worst thing. Right. So I remember like opening the door and Hannah goes, how's it going? You know, cause she's looking at me like, are we going to get a house someday? You know, I'm like, oh
yeah, babe.
Things are really looking up, you know, things are popping out here. It's so true. Yeah. So then it's like, you know, it was probably like a week later, I hit my low point. So we're in this KOA and I remember this one morning I wake up and get my coffee, you know, it's like, I don't know, Tuesday or whatever. And I walk out, I had my pajamas on, right? These were like Batman pajamas because my mother-in-law gave them to me and I couldn't afford anything else. And I just threw on a coat as fast as I can. I go, you know, I'm going to go through the restroom, clean up. And I was in the bathroom. I'm thinking, oh, you know what? We don't have any toilet paper in the camper. So I got the roll and I started collecting some toilet paper from the KOA bathroom. I stuffed this coat, you know, full. And then I zipped the coat up because it was getting cold. Well, it was Hannah's coat. So it's like, you know, kind of creates like that hourglass look or whatever. So I'm walking back and this lady comes up and she has no teeth and she's like, good morning, Mitchell. And I'm like, good morning, Susan. And I had this like moment where I'm like, I'm in my Batman, you know, pajamas. My wife's coat is creating this thing. It's full. I'm full of toilet paper and I'm walking back to the camper and I'm like, all right, I got to fucking turn this around. So that was like, I think that was the very lowest that I.
You're stealing toilet paper from the KOA. Trouble.
Yeah.
Walking through the mud in the trailer down by the river.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but what was interesting, it was like, okay, I was also, it was this weird time because I was also like I'd walk the park and I was counting all the units and doing the math. Like, okay, all these people are paying $550 a month, you know? And like, I wonder what their expenses are. The initial sort of wheels were turning on like I was definitely on the wrong end of this thing as a tenant, but if I could get on the right end of it, I'm like, this thing could be a cash machine, you know? And so, I didn't know how to get on the right end of it, but like, I was starting to think about that. The other thing I thought about was like, when you're low income and you're living in that way, like there's a lot of things you spend your time on that aren't like progressing. And so I also like gained a real heart for people who are stuck in those situations because like, man, it's tough. Like you're dealing with frozen pipes. You're dealing with driving across town to the laundromat. You're dealing with like, so I have a lot of respect for people who start there and who are crawling out of that hole. Like it's super tough.
As a side note, Mitch and I own an RV park together now. So he did get on the other side of that equation. So
yeah, it was like 4 years almost to the day we bought our first park together. And so it took me 4 years to get out of the RV park and buy one. So anyway,
you kept grinding. Wife didn't leave you down by the Green River, brand new baby, trudging around in the mud, stealing toilet paper, like a psycho man, yeah. Talking to Susie, the meth head.
Susan.
Susan, sorry. Things turned around. Things happened.
Yeah. I was trying, they kind of turned around. So I was trying to sell real estate. I was trying everything. Okay. And when I talk about like failure on 0-100 or like to anybody, like I'll tell you, like I failed every day for 4 months before I got my first deal selling real estate. And I actually think about investing and buying real estate as like a cousin to selling real estate, because in the end, you're just trying to make connections. You're trying to put deals together. You're trying to earn somebody's trust. You're trying, you know, and so it has a lot of parallels. But I hadn't sold anything. I didn't know anybody in Seattle and it took me a long time to get traction. I remember I was watching this guy on YouTube and like, I learned to start using scripts. I learned to start asking questions. I learned to like establish a connection versus being so transactional. I just learned a lot of lessons during that time. But that was, you know, it was just a time of just falling. I was just falling on my face over and over and over again, you know, and it took me a long time to get traction. Once I did start to sell some homes you know, the first 4 months I made $1,100. I was super excited about the $1,100, even though we were thousands in the hole. But the second half of the year I hit top 10 at Keller Williams for sales. So I started to crawl out of this hole and make some real money to where I could actually go invest. So what I did was I right when I started to make some money, I scraped together some cash and some hard money, and I bought a house on the auction steps. Cause I was like, I can't rent anymore. I don't want to be, you know, I want to earn some equity. So we bought a house on auction steps, and it was actually this Navy veteran, and I was in the Navy. And so it was kind of like, you know, I thought, well, shoot, I can probably connect with this guy. So I go up, I knock on the door. I said, you know, I open the door, and he goes, I go, hey, I just bought your house. You know, he goes, go fuck yourself. And so he slammed the door. So my first meeting with him went pretty well. So I call this attorney, and he goes, look, go offer him some money, go help him move, go whatever. So I went back to this house. I knocked on the door about a week later, let him cool down. And he opened the door, and I said, hey, before you tell me to screw off, I'm a Navy veteran as well. I'd love to help you move. I'd love to give you the time you need. I'll rent the U-Haul. I'll help you find housing. Like, I had this whole thing, like I had been reciting this in the mirror because I knew this guy was just going to scream at me. And he goes, why don't you come in? So I sat with this guy for an hour. We came up with a plan and helped him find housing, helped him move, you know, kept my promises, and we all of a sudden had a house. I bought it for $101,000. No heat in the house. The guy had chewed tobacco and spit all over the floor and the walls. Mice infested. It was a pretty, that was another adventure. So, but I knew I had to get in the real estate game somehow. And so I was like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in.
Lesson learned there. Like, what do you need? What do I need? How can we work together? How can everybody win? Doesn't just apply to like buying real estate and deals. It applies to potentially getting an unruly tenant out, you know, cash for keys, things like that. Mitch, I have a question for you. Cause if people are jumping off, I want them to hear this. Like, you are a gritty motherfucker. This guy doesn't stop. I mean, we could go through another hour on a call like this on all the business ideas that you've had, crazy business ideas. You still have products in your garage of shit you're trying to sell online. And like, you don't stop and you will never stop. And when I first met Mitch, I think his net worth was a fraction of what it is now. And I looked at him and I go, man, you're going to be a multimillionaire someday. I have no doubt, which he is. And so like, what is your why? Like, what is your why? My why is I was an insecure, you know, a little shithead and I wanted to beat all my peers, but like, what is your why? Like, what makes you like fix this and keep doing it and keep going and keep swinging and keep failing and just keep trying? Like, really, what's your why behind your why too? Not like, I want more money, but like, what was your why? Like, why have you been like this? What makes you tick? I'm actually genuinely interested about this. Maybe we've talked about this, but we were drunk or something and I don't remember.
So. I don't drink, but when I do, I think, yeah. I think that like, I mean, first of all, I go back to time. I think that's really important. But for me, it's more like choice, and it's not, I used to think I didn't want to work, but that's not even true, because if I'm working on the right things, then it's, to me, it's fun. It's not work at all. Like even 0 to 100 and buying real estate, like to me, that's none of it's work, because I really, really, truly enjoy the game. So I think the choice is really important to me, to the choice when to work and who to work with, where to be, you know, geographically. And then, but also like, I think I get a high off of solving problems and like put, you know, and working with other people that I really enjoy and putting things in place, like creating something from nothing is fascinating to me. And I think that's what entrepreneurs do, is they enter the, you know, you guys both did it. We all started with nothing. We've created some really fun stuff and big portfolios and big lives. And to me, I'm like fascinated by that. How do you go in the marketplace, solve a problem, create something from nothing, and work with a team that you really enjoy and like call your own shots. You know, I can't be an employee. I'll never be an employee again. I would make a terrible employee now that I've had this freedom. And so
terrifies me.
So yeah. I think it's time, it's choice, and it's also solving problems and finding places in the marketplace where I can go add value.
Mitch is like a game theory. Mitch is always like, he loves to have these conversations about like, what if, like like the whole question we're going to ask you and we ask everybody on the show, like you're on the couch, you've lost everything, but you're not, like Mitch loves that shit. In fact, that Grant Cardone, that show that he was on, Undercover Million, like we actually had that idea of like doing a show like that. Cause like we thrive on the, like, how cool would it be if you can sort of start from nothing and build something? And I know something else. You met a guy when you were like down by the river in the trailer that was like selling something like snow cones or some bread or donuts or something. 20 seconds. Tell us that story, because that's another cool story.
Yeah. Well, this is an important one. This is like Bob, but this gentleman, so I was, we went to the Seattle fish market. We were downtown there and we're hanging out. We're, you know, saw some family down there and we're poking around, and I was in the trailer at the time. I'm broke as hell. Hadn't closed the real estate deal. I mean, you know, living in the fog and the mud type thing. And I walked by this guy and he goes, "Hey, you want a sample?" It was like teriyaki chicken or something. And I go, "Oh, sure. You know, free food at this time in my life. This is pretty important." So I'm like, I'll take four. I was like, "Hannah, come over here. Let's feed our baby, you know?" So anyway, so I'm eating this chicken and I go, "Hey," like, this guy's like in his 70s, maybe 75 or something. And I go, "Is this like do you have a job here or something?" He goes, no, I'm starting this restaurant. And he's like, "I'm starting this restaurant. I'm super excited about it." He goes off on this whole thing. And I'm thinking to myself, like, 75, like, have you been in the restaurant business before? Like, there's gotta be more to this guy than, you know? And he goes, "Well, yeah, you know, have you ever heard of Red Robin?" And I'm like, "Yeah, like, well, of course, you know, Red Robin's pretty popular in the Northwest and stuff." He goes, "Well, I grew that and I sold that business. And now I'm doing another startup at 75 years old." And he's excited as hell about it. Right. So,
which, by the way, is either a really cool story, or this guy was on crazy drugs down on Pike Street in Seattle.
No. Right? So I looked, I verified everything. This guy is, no kidding, the guy. But this point in my life really changed me too, because I realized, like, he kind of gave context to the journey. So I go, like, I started talking to him. He goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "Look, I mean, honestly, I'm living in a trailer at the KOA down in Kent. I'm trying to, you know, make it in real estate. I want to be an investor. I told him kind of what we're doing." And he's like, "Literally, you're living in a trailer with your wife and everything?" And he's like, I left my job. I, you know, told him the story. And he goes, "Well, come over here for a second." We kind of went around the corner and we're talking and kind of got into a quieter spot there. And he goes, "You know, there was a point in my life where we had this foreclosure home, my wife and I, and a brand new kid about your, you know, your girl's age." And he goes, and we had like no less than like 9 streams of water coming down through the roof. And we were running around the house with buckets and we're trying to collect the water." Right. And he woke up, you know, middle of the night, they're doing this. They wake up the next morning. He goes, "Honey, like, we can start the restaurant," which was Red Robin, by the way, "or we can fix the roof, but we can't do both." And she was like, "Let's start the restaurant." And so they went and started the restaurant, this whole thing. I know it was a really cool story. And he goes, I've been through it. And he goes, "And by the way, I live on the water in a gorgeous home. We have everything we need, all the resources we need after the sale of Red Robin, all this stuff." And he goes, "And you know what my wife and I talk about?" He goes, "We talk about the buckets all the time." So he's like, "So realize where you are, man. These are the good old days. Enjoy it. Have fun with the journey. Enjoy the process." And that right there really changed me too, because I realized that, like, you know, some of the most fun times in your life is when you got a couple bucks in your pocket and you're trying to figure it out and you're scrappy and you've got a positive attitude. Like, it can be, life is good on both sides, right? And the journey is really what it's all about.
It really is. I love that, man. That's a really good story. So Mitch, keep going. I know we're just going over on time. You did well in real estate. You cranked it out. Another story, you're living in an apartment and they're raising rents on you. And you're like, you did the math and you're like, "I know what they're doing here. They're repositioning this asset." And I'm like, on the other side again, here I am.
Well, between the trailer, where we live in the KOA and the foreclosure, we lived in an apartment for a little while. And it was like every month they sent a letter, $20, $25, you know, so over 6 months they raised rent, like over $100, you know, and I started to read about that. Cause I'm like, okay, well, what does that do for the value? I started to Google that and try to understand that. And I realized we were being repositioned, the apartment building. As they raised rents, they were painting things and fixing the pool and they were doing all these things. And it just sold too, by the way, it's new ownership. So I started to understand and unpack this idea of repositioning a community. And my wife was super pissed about these letters. And I'm like, "This is the best thing ever." I'm like, "Look at them. They're crushing it right now." And she's, you know, so, but anyway, I started to put that together and I'm like, we got to get on the right side of this equation. We got to figure out how to go, you know, change communities. So So I don't know. I was just picking up clues, you know, there are all these little clues to wealth. And I think when you're in your life, when you look at what you spend money on, look at where your cash flows. It flows to housing. It flows to healthcare. It flows to transportation. It flows to, and I'm like, if you get on the right side of the equation, you can change that equation very quickly, because on the other side is can be very profitable. So I was kind of looking for clues along the way.
I love also, like, lesson learned here is if you're like tuned into the world and you have a different lens and a different mindset and a different perspective, and you're operating at a different frequency and you're open to receiving different signals in the universe or the world, like, not to get woo woo, you meet guys like Bob, you meet guys like the founder of Red Robin, you look at like a reposition and you're not like just pissed off because your rent's going up. You're going, or you're counting the pads in the RV park. Most 99% of the people don't do that. And they don't look at the world that way, but because you're tuned into a different frequency, you're seeing those things. Then you meet people like Gabe, or you meet people like me, you know, and cool things happen. So I love that. I love your story, man.
Yeah. I think that manifesting, and changing the way you think is the number one thing you can do. The second you put a big vision in place and you figure out your why, and you start to visualize that, the universe really starts to align. And it's not magic, but you just see everything differently. You meet the people, they fall into your life. You're like you said, you're tuned into a different frequency. And I've seen it over and over and over again in my life. I mean, including working with you guys. Like, I just think that you change your frequency, you change everything, and things start to fall in place in a really, really fun way. So,
and to complete the story, Mitch moved to Hood River or the Columbia Gorge. All his dreams came true when he met me. We're sitting around in this office, figuring out what the hell we wanted. We had a few units each. We learned about raising capital. We learned about forced appreciation. We learned about cash flow, and the rest is history, right? I mean, there's a lot in there. I think we've talked about the story quite a bit.
There's a lot there, but I mean, no, I think that, like, we, Travis and I met as business partners, and we, you know, my journey to scale, like, I'll just be brief here, but like it started to change with mindset and education, and also by really having a good partner that we could basically mastermind together. And we started to ask big questions. And I think part of, if you're listening to this and you're starting out, start to ask big questions and then start filling those questions or answering those questions with clues and with people and with books and with podcasts. We asked the question how we could scale. And within a few short years, we did scale. And that was, but the only reason we got there was we were like really open to like researching and meeting the right people and expanding our network and learning the right things and reading the right books. And so, like, I think when I look back on my journey so far and my journey going forward, I think the number one thing is like, stay open to learning. Learning shouldn't stop at, you know, a degree or whatever, like really, really dive in and ask big questions and set a big vision and then backfill, figure out how you can go one day at a time and start to put that big vision together.
Yeah. That's amazing. Mitch, thanks for sharing your story. I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit more, and, you know, hearing some of the details of your story it's fun and inspiring.
Oh, last three questions. I know we normally have two. One of the questions is just real quick. How many businesses have you started and failed at?
Probably four or five, including going to, I went to Shark Tank with my wife with a project. I've had businesses that I've launched and not made a dollar on. I've lost money on businesses. I still have a garage full of product from different challenges and different, you know, different ideas and things I've gotten into. I will say the one business that holds true that I've succeeded on over and over again is cash flow real estate. I mean, I just go back to that, you know, I just go back to that. But I mean, I think part of being an entrepreneur is go forward, fail, learn from it, pivot, keep going.
Well, and that question wasn't to like shame you. It was like, if you look at any successful person, oftentimes there's a lot of, they've taken a lot of swings and misses in their life. And it's the person, to Gabe's point, they swing, they miss, they're standing in a pile of dog shit, they quit. And that separates the people that actually achieve their goals, hit R1 scale, and those that don't, is they just keep trying and they keep swinging and they lace their boots up every day and they go to work and they make incremental improvements every single day, and they're savage about it and they're relentless about it and they have a really, really strong why.
But also, like I feel like the failures are like, I mean, I, like you talk about a business that fails, there's also a ton of the only reason it failed, or one of those failed, honestly, is I just stopped. And so, like, I even look at Acadia, you know, or 0 to 100 or anything we do today, like during a day, I fail all the time and I'm proud of it. I try things, or I make a phone call, or send an offer, or have a conversation that didn't go well. There's plenty of failures. There's it's you're surrounded by it. I think every castle's, you know, built out of like bricks of failure. And that's, you know, but resilience is the difference, and you just got to keep going.
If you're on the couch and your buddy's couch, maybe mine downstairs though, because we don't like to keep you on the main level of the house, because that's awkward to have you there.
Maybe it's the house that the dog shit all over. You've lost everything and you're back at that house on a couch.
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing I do is I refuse to get a job personally. I believe that a job can suck all the life and energy and time out of you. And I think that that's the one for me, it's the fastest way to get trapped. And so for me, ideally, if I have some good connections, I'm going to borrow some money. I'm going to see if I can borrow between $10,000 and $20,000. And that's going to allow me to get a beat up car and in my own space, an apartment, a computer, a phone, the necessities, and to give me some time to really go create opportunity. My next step after borrowing a little bit of money, just to, because that's food money, right? Just to survive. I'm going to go out and I'm going to go find deals, and I'm going to network, and I'll do exactly what I do today, because I know how to find deals. I have that. That's an insurance policy for me, understanding that. And I'm going to go put together real estate deals, whether it could be a fast wholesale deal, could be a long-term hold, an acquisition fee, but I'm going to get in the game as fast as I can. And I'm going to refuse to get a job, in my opinion.
I love that. Who do you think of all three of us is the most attractive?
Well, I mean, oh man,
inside
it's a really hard question. I think I am. Yeah, no, I mean, if I rule me out, I feel like it's like, I mean, the best way to answer this, I think it's like Travis is a good Wednesday guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's like middle of the week, steady Eddie, but Gabe is probably a Friday. You see what I'm saying? Like, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
I don't know if I want to dig into that anymore. I don't think
I knew
what the hell are you talking about.
I knew you wouldn't. So that's
Wednesday is hump day.
Well, I meant Tuesday.
Oh boy. Yeah. Okay. Oh boy.
Okay. Now,
I'm not judging. I'm just asking.
I don't know. I don't know anything about it, Gabe.
Okay.
So,
Mitch, dude. Love you, brother. Like I said, Mitch is way more than meets the eye. You look at him, you're just like, not impressive, but he's actually an incredibly impressive human. And love having you on this. I think this is probably going to be one of our most popular podcasts. It'll be the most downloaded. So all three of us will download it. Listen to it. So,
yeah.
No, man, like, this is super cool.
It'll be you guys and my mom.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Super inspirational. A lot of nuggets of gold that came out of this interview. Hopefully it was for those of you that are listening, or, you know, hopefully y'all believe the same thing. So get on the tribe, get active, engage with people, post articles, answer questions. Like, let's get this tribe hopping. Invite your friends. We're just going to keep delivering as much value as we possibly can. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.